by popular demand. It's our post-game edition here in Ball Arena of Hockey Mountain High, your go-to Avalanche podcast, presented by Total Beverage in Thornton and Westminster, with me, JJ Jerez, and of course, Arif Dean, here to break down the 3-2 overtime victory in Game 1 over the St. Louis Blues. Five wins in a row in the playoffs here. And Arif, it's been 18 days, well, I guess now that it's almost midnight, we could call it 19 days since the Avalanche have last lost a hockey game.
So you're telling me that when they went 1-5-1 to end the regular season, the sky wasn't falling?
No, it's actually still up there. It didn't fall.
Nice. Good to know. Well, I mean, my brain's about to fall out of my head because we have a guy with a leaf blower here at Ball Arena cleaning the garbage with a leaf blower. So if you hear any background noise, we are so very sorry. But this is backed by popular demand. I know how much you guys love these in games 1 and 2. We wanted to bring it out for games 3 and 4. It didn't end up working out with Peter out in Nashville, so we're going to try to do that this round. But, yeah, that was an incredible game, and I think we need to talk about it.
Yeah, let me just really quickly touch on the leaf blower guy. I think he's focusing less on trash and more on the pom-pom strands that
gotcha.
Fell, right? So that's what he's focusing on. That's why we haven't seen that stupid machine here before. But if you hear it in the background, we apologize. We're doing our best here in an almost empty Ball Arena. But yeah, let's get into that game a little bit deeper. It felt a lot like game 2 from the Nashville series, right? Avalanche completely dominated, almost doubled their opponent in shots, and had to squeak it out in overtime.
Yeah, 54 shots to just 25 for the St. Louis Blues. And I know there was a 13-0 shot discrepancy in overtime, which in itself is mind-blowing considering that overtime ended in 8 minutes and 2 seconds.
Zero shots from the St. Louis Blues
in
overtime.
None. And just like the Nashville game, you kind of felt like if the Avalanche don't get this ASAP, and St. Louis is a lot more opportunistic, as Jared Bednar said, but it kind of had that feel that if the Avalanche don't get this going ASAP, St. Louis is going to get one opportunistic rush the other way, and they're going to score on their first look. And that's kind of what happened with Mark Stone in Game 5 last year against the Vegas Golden Knights, which sent the series back to Vegas trailing 3-2 and on the brink. So the Avalanche, even before the overtime period, 41-25 in shots. They kind of took over in the second period where it was 19-9. That was kind of the difference there. And even in the third period, they kept it up, even though they surrendered the only goal. So it was an incredible performance by the Avalanche that once again just kind of continued what they were doing in the first round. It doesn't feel like they let the game get away from them. And I know that game 1 against Vegas last year was similar in terms of just total domination, but it's different this year. And last year's not this year, like Gabe said, but it's different this year in the sense that you kind of expected the Avalanche to beat Vegas last year. They switched their goalie. They had played 2 nights earlier against Minnesota. Well, this time the Avalanche and the Blues were both fresh. They were both rested. They were both ready to rock. And the Avalanche came out and did that to them. And that's just, I don't want to say I didn't expect it, but I also didn't expect it. Like, they came out and they said, we are going to do the exact same thing to this team that had over 100 points and was one of the best teams in the NHL this year that we did to the team that barely squeaked into the playoffs. It's one game, but it was an incredible performance.
Right, and looking back at that game two from the first round of the Nashville series, Connor Ingram was the biggest hiccup, the biggest hurdle for the Avalanche to overcome in that game, right? Where tonight, Jordan Binnington wasn't necessarily playing out of his mind or even playing well. The Avalanche hit, what was it, 4 posts, a handful of missed nets, a handful of over the crossbar shots, and a handful of, you know, open opportunities.
JT Compher coughing it up. Eric Johnson whiffing, right? Just slightly and letting Binnington get to it. The way that I saw the game, you know what's funny? In that game, Connor Ingram game, the Avalanche outshot the Predators 51-26. They had 3 more shots today and gave up 1 fewer. So they technically had a better performance tonight than they did in that game 2 against Nashville. Like, mm-hmm. That is mind-blasting to me. Not even mind-blowing. That, like, just completely is outrageous to think. Because that Connor Ingram game in game 2 felt like a completely one-sided affair, and that's what today was. The crazy thing is Jordan Binnington's performance was a tale of 2 different guys. First half of the game, it was exactly that. It was a lot of, like, holy shit, this guy's getting lucky. Through 40 minutes, it was Eric Johnson not getting all of it, but barely getting any of it on that desperation save where he damn near dislocated his shoulder from its socket to go to reach far enough to get that puck that was just kind of sliding its way through. JT Compher having that incredible chance where he, you know, had a chance to get the puck and kind of slide it in, and it just got away from him. Devon Toews had that one chance in front where instead of going wide to the far post, he tried to slide at five hole. Post after post after post. I remember one of them was Lekkonen. Just a lot of chances. And then the second half of the game, we saw Binnington start to make some nice saves. He had one on Valanichushkin in overtime. He had a couple there on the power play in regulation. He really started to pick it up, but it still wasn't enough.
Absolutely. And then you saw the puck luck being a thing again, right? As I mentioned, as you mentioned, a couple missed opportunities. But you also saw a couple, I guess, missed passes early, right? The question came up again in the press conference. Did you guys feel rusty? Everybody denied it. No rusty. But I definitely saw a little bit of rust there, at least from a mental standpoint, right? I think there's one thing in terms of skill when you're playing hockey and you're going through practices throughout the week. You're going to keep up with the skill. But maybe the mental level of the game slips a little bit. And that's kind of what I saw early on. They corrected it after that first period.
They did, but both of their goals were mental lapses. The O'Reilly shot, I don't want to call it a mental lapse as much as it was a...
fortuitous bounce.
Very fortuitous bounce, as somebody, I forget, who tweeted that it was like it plinkoed its way to O'Reilly. Mm-hmm. Just kind of like beep, 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 right to his stick. And O'Reilly right in front of the crease with this much space to go to the backhand and put it to the top of the net. We've seen him do that before. He's done it for years. The second goal they got, four guys on the PK, and Jared Bednar spoke in length about this right now post-game, about all four of the guys changing all at once, not having two guys stay back. He called it a lack of discipline, a lack of carelessness, where, you know, you want to switch to get the healthier bodies on the ice, or not the healthier, but fresh bodies on the ice, but you got to keep two guys back and let two guys change on the strong side and keep the other two guys on the weak side. He went into the whole thing about how it was a very poor decision by the PKers after killing off 90 seconds of a pretty great PK before surrendering that goal to Jordan Kyrou. So the biggest thing for me to take away from both of those goals, and that was a very, very long-winded way of Arif taking over the podcast once again, but the biggest thing for me for both of those goals that I just explained is two very correctable mental lapses. The St. Louis Blues, like the Avalanche, put on a clinic against this team. I don't think we can speak enough about just how dominating a performance that was. And I know it's just game one, but this is a good Blues team. This is a team that we're hearing about being able to match the Avalanche's depth, to being able to match the Avalanche shot for shot and goal for goal. And I didn't see it tonight. And I don't know what it's going to take for them to rebound, but I haven't seen it from the opposition all playoffs. I know the first four games were in Nashville, but what the Avalanche did today and the way that St. Louis scored their goals didn't give me a lot to feel like St. Louis has a chance in the series unless something truly genuinely changes. Even Binnington couldn't stop it.
Again, I hate to keep comparing it to game two of the last round, but it feels like that again, where this might have been St. Louis's best effort, their best attempt at a
steal of a game.
At a steal of a game, and their shot attempts, the Avalanche doubled them with just shots on goal. They didn't even have enough shot attempts. So, definitely a dominating performance from the Avalanche. And you know, if you're St. Louis, you got to be pretty deflated after giving it your all, giving it that much of an effort, and still coming up way short. But let's get into the physicality, right? I think shout out to Peter Ball, our co-host and friend, for calling it the other night. I thought it was going to be a more physical series, and definitely was not. It was definitely a more focused, more defensive series, I would say. Both teams really focusing on that defense and trying to slow each other down. So I guess the physical side, only 86 hits tonight, right? In the Nashville
only,
games.
Only, yeah.
Right, it's a lot, but in the Nashville games, we were over 100. So see the physicality has taken a little bit of a step back in round two.
But who are the guys that are leading the charge? It's Eric Johnson with 6, it's Nicholas Aube-Kubel with 6, and it's Gabe Landeskog with 6. Those are the guys that you needed to step up. And then just a breath air, other way around, a breath of fresh air. Darren Helm with 5 hits. I'm loving what he's been doing in the playoffs from the first game. I can't believe I just whiffed on that. That was brutal. But it's the guys that you expect to lay out the hits are the guys that are doing it. But most importantly, what, like you said, what Peter was saying was so spot on that, like, you knew St. Louis came out and, you know, wanted to come out and say, forget the physicality, let's try to beat this team, and just an epic fail. Not only were they not able to beat the Avalanche and match them in terms of offense and offensive chances, but the Avalanche outhit the Blues and did it by 8, even though they controlled the puck for most of the time. usually when you're controlling the puck, you're the team getting out hit because obviously the team on its heels is the one laying out the hits.
Yeah,
and the Avalanche were not the one that were allowing that. I mean, the Blues had 45 shot attempts, shots on goal, plus block shots, plus missed shots.
Exactly, that's what I was trying to say. Yeah. And the Avs got 54 shots on goal.
So and 106 shot attempts.
Right.
They had more on goal than the Blues did just go off of the blade of their stick.
I don't think it came out of my mouth and my brain the right way.
I knew what you were trying to get to.
There's an obvious difference and a lack of sharpness in our post-game pods here.
Yeah,
I think.
For sure. It's 11:58 p.m. right now. So it's been a long night. But you know what? It's fine. People love these. And so do I. So we'll keep bringing them out to you. But yeah, the biggest thing for me is the fact that, again, like the Blues were no match. This was a more one-sided discrepancy in shots and chances and high danger and quality opportunities than game two against Nashville. So what about this says to me, and again, I don't want to get quoted later as like, you idiot, you overhyped the Avalanche. But like, what about this game says to me that the Blues can rebound? I know every game in the playoffs is its own demon, or it's its own beast, I should say. And things could come out differently. Obviously, the Avalanche in round one, we saw the same thing happen every night. Boom. Boom, boom, boom. They dominated every single thing. But look at the other series. Toronto versus Tampa Bay. Toronto came out in game one like gangbusters. Tampa Bay dominated game two. Toronto dominated game three. Tampa Bay dominated. So you know that momentum can shift. But I'm just curious where it's going to come from the Blues here in game two on Thursday, I should say.
Yeah, definitely didn't seem like they had too much momentum at any point of the game. And if they did, it was at the very beginning and it quickly got ripped away from them once the Avalanche kind of got used to the pace again and got used to everything mentally, like I said. So let's get into Josh Manson, right? Obviously the
what a delightful guy.
Hero of the day. I think what really stood out to me was his press conference quote there when he said how much he loved the mindset of the team after they got scored on in the first goal. Nobody changed anything. They knew that they were going to come back. They had the confidence in themselves and they just had to keep doing what they were doing, and that's what they did and it worked.
Yeah, and I love that. I love the fact that, the Avalanche, I mean, they came out pretty well. Sam Girard had the first golden opportunity of the night, if you remember, in the first period before the Blues got the 1-0 lead. And I think they even had hit a post by then. So the Avalanche knew they were playing well. They knew they had some good chances. They knew that from the opening faceoff, like Jared said, there was no rust. They looked well. They looked like they were playing well. And then the puck plane coast to Ryan O'Reilly. He does his thing, backhander goal. And, you know, again, it goes back to the mindset of the team. And I know Manson wasn't here last year to kind of say, like, oh, last year, this is what we would have felt, and this year, this is how we felt. But just the way that he explained how the team just kind of was like, we're good, we're fine, is very refreshing, because this is a team that we've seen kind of mentally beat itself up in the past. And it doesn't seem like they're going to allow that to happen this time around. And I know it's just game one, but it looked like they really rebounded well from that in terms of just the mental standpoint of, like, you come out, you're dominating, you're not going to get deflated. And kind of what I'm curious to see, again, you can't manufacture adversity, but at some point they're going to lose one of these games. That game two against Nashville, that game one against St. Louis. At some point, you're going to have a night like that and you're going to lose. And I'm very curious to see how the post-game press conference sounds. And I'm very curious to see how they come out the next game to basically have that same mindset, because you are going to eventually face adversity. You're not going to go 16-0 in the playoffs. So are they going to come out after losing a game like this and just talk about how it's fine, or are they going to be frustrated and let it get to them?
Right. I've talked a lot of times over the last couple of weeks about the even keel mindset that they're obviously running with, right? And that's exactly what you're saying there. I mean, if they take a punch in the mouth and they face a loss, chances are this even keel mindset's going to prevail and they're going to be back to right back to where they were. The only thing that's funny to me is how even keel and how focused they've been, but when they get one of these overtime goals, the entire bench goes bananas.
Lose like, their mind.
More so than I feel is normal.
And the last time they played an overtime last year, we saw how they lost that game to Mark Stone and the Vegas Golden Knights. And I think every game matters. Every game is its own beast. And I think they're very much aware how important it is to get those chances, score those chances, especially given the way that they've played both these overtime periods where, you know, they've outshot the Blues today 13-0. And against the Nashville Predators, they had 9 shots in overtime and outshot them 9-6. they don't want to let these kinds of games slip away. So it's more of like this relief and it's the excitement, it's the adrenaline. And for Josh Manson, his first ever career NHL playoff goal, like, holy shit, does it get any better than that scored in overtime?
Yep, and he did it on 4 shots, which was pretty, I guess, just good to see him.
He looked good offensively,
too. Getting the puck to the net. Yeah, I mean, he had a couple that didn't quite make it to the net, so yeah. He's shooting the puck.
There was really quick. There was that one opportunity where the Avalanche had a counterattack, and it was a 3-on-2, and I was like, oh, here come the Avalanche. And then I made a joke to you of, like, and the rush is led by number 42, yep. Josh Manson, and he comes into the zone, goes between the hash marks, circles back to the point, makes a nice pass off to Kadri or whoever to Lekkonen, and like it turned into a golden opportunity. Like, he mm-hmm. played it really well. He's got some offensive upside to him.
Well, yeah, he knows how to create space. He knows how to manipulate his opponent, and I think we saw a lot of that tonight.
This team brings it out of everybody on the blue line, and I love it.
With that, let's get into Sam Girard's game. 7 shots on goal out of Sam Girard, and it just looked like he isn't quite back to himself, but he's making progress, right? Seeing him on the score sheet's great, and seeing a lot of the plays he was making were good. There could have been some cleaner moments, but I think Sam Girard had a pretty solid game tonight.
Yeah, I think so as well, and I saw him do that tornade there late in regulation, and just that confidence of having him kind of enjoy what he's doing. It kind of reminds me of Burakovsky early in the season, where he was snapping his stick against the boards and all these things in practice while playing for the first place Avalanche. Like, he just wasn't having a good time, and it felt like for a while Sam Girard wasn't having a good time, and it's getting that excitement back into his game is what makes him great. Like, that's what made him great for almost 2 years before he kind of took a little bit of a dip late in the playoffs last year. And then, you know, that kind of carried over into this year in terms of offensive production and confidence, and just kind of the boneheaded mistake. So for Sam, that was a great step in the right direction. Obviously, he scored a goal. He had 7 shots. He had a ton of hits. He had a lot of opportunities. And it seemed like he was doing it while kind of banged up physically as well. Like, he was a little hurt.
Throughout the entire regular season, we saw how much the defensive group contributed, right? I mean, from a point standpoint, from a win standpoint, the defensive group kind of was the heart and soul of this team. As much talent as there is on the forward group, the defense really led the way, and it was kind of similar tonight. Here's a couple fun stats, right? 2 goals out of defensemen. Of course, we got Josh Manson and Sam Girard. 25 shots out of the defensemen. So 2 goals on 25 shots, whereas the forwards had 1 goal on 29 shots.
I did not realize they had 25 shots. That's incredible. The Avalanche's defense had as many shots as the St. Louis Blues.
Yep.
Is what you're telling me.
That's exactly what I'm telling you.
And the Avalanche played 6 defensemen, not 7 like the Blues. That's incredible. Also, shout out to Josh Manson. He had an assist as well. So he had 1 goal and an assist tonight. He came into this series with 4 playoff points, and he's already got 2. So just an incredible performance. I mean, I love that. And Kale Makar also had an assist initially on the Nichushkin goal that was later taken away and given to MacKinnon. So just seeing the Avalanche's defense continue to do what they did all season. Like, they blew away any other team in terms of defensive offensive production from the blue line. They were, I think it was like more than 40 points more than the second best team in the NHL this year. Like, it was just crazy numbers, and they're going to keep it going in the playoffs. Kale Makar's got 10 points in 5 games, and he had 0 today. He had 10 in the first round.
I mean, you don't want to be shocked, because we saw it all season, but the fact that it's still producing at this level and it's the playoffs and they're kind of still carrying the weight, that's definitely something I didn't anticipate. And if it continues, I mean, this team
cannot be stopped. Kale Makar and Devontae's, it's not going to be a lot of games where you're going to keep those 2 off the score sheet. So for St. Louis to keep Taves and Makar off the score sheet and keep MacKinnon outside of an assist off the score sheet, Landeskog had a big part in the last goal, so I'm not going to say him, but to keep those guys off the score sheet and still lose has got to be deflating, because you know they're going to come back and they're going to put up points, and that's the beauty of this. I mean, Eric Johnson, we talked about it. He had a wide open net and whiffed on the puck, nearly got any of it. Otherwise, he would have had one as well.
Not Kale McCarr's best game, but nice to see that the other guys on the group can carry the weight when Kale Makar isn't.
Yeah, how funny is that? Kale Makar is a defenseman. He played 29 minutes and 12 seconds, by the way, almost 4 minutes more than the next most guy in Devon Taves, which you never see that. Usually, Makar and Taves are kind of like right there with each other in terms of time on ice. But as a defenseman, if you're not noticeable, it usually means you've had a pretty decent night, because you're not giving the puck away, you're not causing any bad turnovers, you're not noticeable because you're not doing anything boneheaded to be noticeable. that's kind of the game that Cale Makar had today. He had three takeaways, which is incredible in its own right. He had one block shot. He had a couple hits. He obviously had the one giveaway, which was that Plinko'd puck that went right to O'Reilly. Four shots and then another four that were blocked. So all things considered, Cale Makar had a good night. Cale Makar's standards, not very good night.
Right.
And that tells you all you need to know about the level of skill this guy provides every night.
Exactly. I think the fun stat I was just noticing when you were rattling off the time on ice there, Cale Makar with 29 minutes and 12 seconds in 32 shifts. Val Nichushkin with 30 shifts, so just two less, 22 minutes. 7-minute difference in two shifts.
That's what happens when you play 44 seconds of average shift length for Nichushkin and 54 for Kale. Kale has got the stamina of a horse, and Val, as Landeskog called him, is a train. Val goes out there for 44 seconds, just whipping back and forth, full energy, full force, and then he's got to go for a change. And that's what I love about Val's game. He goes at 100% the entire time he's on the ice.
One's a horse, one's a train.
Love it.
Let's get into the faceoffs. I think, you know, often overlooked, often, you know, a weak point of the Avalanche, but they did really well in the faceoff dot, winning 64% of the faceoffs. I think it was pivotal. You know, again, we often like to overlook the faceoff stat and consider it meaningless, but tonight it had effect. It had an impact. Nathan MacKinnon's faceoff on that first goal was everything, right? I mean, that's what really generated it for Val Nichushkin. So, Kadri going 8 wins with 9 faceoffs. Confer going 5 wins on 6 faceoffs. And basically, I think it's wild looking at Ryan O'Reilly's faceoff numbers. 26 wins on 26 of the 53 faceoffs for St. Louis were taken by Ryan O'Reilly.
Yeah, I got 28 here on the updated sheet, and yeah, of those 28, he only won 12. So he was well down below his average. He was at 43%. The beauty of what I'm seeing here, and I was thinking about this throughout the game. First of all, Nathan MacKinnon took 23 of the total faceoffs, and there was only 54 in the game, or 53 in the game. You never see Nathan MacKinnon take that many. But that's what happens when you take Landeskog off his wing. Well, now Landeskog's playing on Kadri's wing. Landeskog won 5 of 6, Kadri won 8 of 9. So 8-1, 5-1. I don't want to say I have a theory, but I have this idea in my head that it makes sense that you have Landeskog playing with Kadri, because the dude gets kicked out of the faceoff circle more than anybody I've ever seen, and he needs the extra faceoff guy more than MacKinnon does, mm-hmm. in my opinion, and it's nice to have him there, because together, you know, not that Landeskog's faceoffs were all even strength, because he did take some power play faceoffs, but together, that second line won 13 of 15 faceoffs. They're going to control the puck, and when they control the puck and you got puck possession guys like Kadri and Lehkonen and Landeskog, what's going to take it away from them? And it's so important to win those faceoffs, especially in crucial moments, and we saw it lead to some goals here.
Yeah, and I mean, you just look at the faceoff count, right, with Nathan MacKinnon at 23 and Ryan O'Reilly at 28, you know that those two are going head-to-head, and I mean, it's pretty even. But just the fact that Nathan MacKinnon can keep it even versus a guy like Ryan O'Reilly, I think says a lot about where his faceoff game has come in the last year.
Last 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I mean, this is not something that we expected from him even in the first round, so it's great to see him kind of picking it up here. It's really crucial, again, especially against teams like the St. Louis Blues that have a lot of guys that possess the puck and do it for long periods of time.
So all that being said, what are we expecting for Game 2 Thursday night right here back at Ball Arena? I guess, are you anticipating any adjustments? Do you see a similar game coming out of each team? Or just what do you predict here?
There's nothing to change if you're the Avalanche.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to say it was a question mark or a head scratcher, but I thought it was interesting. That's the word I'm going to use. That I thought it was interesting that Jared took O'Connor out, put Cogliano back in, and kept Abe Kubel in the lineup. But Abe Kubel had an excellent game. He did his part. Once again, the Avalanche showed with their performance that they are not lacking offense. They don't need Alex Newhook's offensive abilities right now, because what's the point of playing Alex Newhook if he's going to play the 13 minutes that Abe Kubel played or the 9 minutes that Cogliano played? Abe Kubel in his 13 minutes had 6 hits. He was one of the most, he was the leader on the Avalanche, like I was saying, with Eric Johnson and Gabe Landeskog. You're not going to get that from Newhook.
And you're not having a problem producing offense, which
exactly.
is
exactly. That's what I'm trying to say, is that, like, you don't need to go to the well for this offensive kid. I thought it was interesting that Jared went back to the lineup that started game one before Cogliano's injury. And despite the fact that he's playing a deeper team, despite all the changes, he said, I'm going to go right back to what I was planning in the beginning of the playoffs, and it worked. And I think that's great for the Avalanche. They're going to keep doing what they do. And if you're St. Louis, you better be adjusting some things, but that's for them to figure out. On our side, I think the Avalanche just got to come out and play the same exact game. They've been doing it for five games now. They're averaging well over 45 shots per game in the playoffs.
Yep, and St. Louis has to be thanking their lucky stars that Nathan MacKinnon did not score a goal tonight, but there's a good chance they're not going to be able to hold him off that much longer.
Him or Cale Makar, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
And I will say real quickly, and it's not because of what he did tonight, but because I just think it's going to happen. We are going to see Billy Huso at some point in the series.
Oh, yeah. I think St. Louis would be silly not to at this point.
You're going to need to use both your guys. If you're taking 54 shots a game and you're playing every other night, that the other goalie's not going to play every single game.
And we mentioned the post. We mentioned the missed nets. Think about how many pucks actually beat Binnington, just didn't get within the red posts.
First half of the game, the Avalanche legitimately could have had five or six.
Mm-hmm. So they can easily put up five or six on Binnington at any point, and then there you go. You got a goalie controversy on their hands all over again. But, that's everything I wanted to get into
and
for this game.
The last thing to close it out before we do close this out, I think this is a really cool stat that the NHL record for most wins against any single team in the playoffs is 9. There's quite a few teams that are up there at 9. The Avalanche are currently at 8 against the St. Louis Blues.
Mm.
They won tonight. They won 4 straight last year, the sweep. And then in 2001, you got to go back from 2021 to 2001, the last time these two teams met. It was a 1-1 series after the first two games of the Western Conference Final, and then the Avalanche won 3 straight to make it to the Cup Final. So the Avalanche have won 8 straight against the St. Louis Blues. On Thursday, they can match the NHL record and go 9 straight in the playoffs against them. Just an interesting number, even though it goes back 20 years after last year's sweep.
The name Roman Čechmánek pops into my head. Was he in that?
Roman Turek.
Roman Turek.
Roman Čechmánek was on the Flyers.
Ah.
Yeah.
Right, Roman Turek.
Roman Turek was in goal that year.
Right on. Well, we'll see if they can make it 6 in a row. Of course, we don't want to get too excited about 6 playoff wins in a row, because that's exactly what they did last year. So once they get that 7th, maybe we'll get a little bit more pumped about it. But we'll see what happens on Thursday. Hopefully they don't keep us here till 12:30 at night like they did tonight. Take care of business. Let's see another blowout. Head into St. Louis up 2-0 with all St. Louis's confidence shot.
That would be great, and that would be massive for this team. I think the biggest thing for the Avalanche is not just to get out of the second round, but to try to get out of the second round unscathed. Try to get a 3-0 or 3-1 series lead, and then really put an end to it as soon as you can. Don't let this be a hard-fought series. You're going to play. If you can get out of this round, you're going to have tough competition in the third round. One of those Battle of Alberta teams that are going to beat the shit out of each other for 7 games, and then, potentially a Stanley Cup final. You need to get out of the Central Division as unscathed as possible.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to say sweep, but imagine if they can sweep, because they absolutely can.
Call it a gentleman's sweep.
They can absolutely sweep this round.
Yes.
Imagine they do, and they're heading in the third round like, hey, when were these playoffs supposed to start? Yeah, where are these other playoff teams here? So, thanks for hanging out with us here on the post-game edition of the podcast right here on Hockey Mountain High. Presented by
Avalanche Podcast.
Presented by Total Beverage and Thornton Westminster. Dang, I kind of like that. We should do that more often, where I say Hockey Mountain High, you say your go-to Avalanche Podcast, and then we have Peter say the part about Total Beverage.
Love it.
Maybe get Patrick to say some things again like he used to. Thanks for hanging out with us, guys. We love every one of you, and we love you especially if you love our post-game podcast. So we did this just for you. Let us know what you think about it. And other than that, let's keep enjoying these playoffs. So thanks for hanging out with us. If you made it this far in the podcast, it wasn't that hard.
But bless your pretty little hearts anyway.
Let's make hockey for everyone. We got you.